Let me start off the message with, you know that I love old hymns. And when I was a kid going to church, we had a songbook called Worship and Song. And that at time was considered the new hymn book. But if you would go to an old church, they might still have the old hymn book. And then I remember when I was in college, they came out with another new hymn book. And so that made the other one, Worship and Song, old. And nobody had these anymore. This is the really old one. Now, there's some of the songs that are in the really old one that if you would I'm talking 30 years ago. If you would mention some of these songs from the really old hymn book, people 30 years ago would roll their eyes because they would think it's so old-fashioned. We don't sing these songs anymore. But one of the songs I haven't been able to get out of my mind, I thought I'd share with you. It's called God Moves in a Mysterious Way. Hear this. God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds you so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. For God moves in a mysterious way. And sometimes it's hard to understand what the Lord's doing, what's going on. It's very easy for my mind to go to the Old Testament and remember the story of Joseph. Joseph was part of a very large family. Altogether, there were 12 boys in the family and one girl. And he was number 11 boy. And the world was different back then, and the set of circumstances were different. His dad wanted to marry Joseph's mom. That was the plan. She was the one that he liked. She's the one that he actually made an arrangement with Uncle Laban, that he would work for him for 7 years if he could marry Rachel. So he worked for 7 years. Wedding was planned. Big ceremony. And the way they did it back then is the woman would be all covered up, big veil, and it would only be when you get to take her home that night in the privacy of your room that you'd get to take the veil off. And I guess they didn't have very good lighting in the room because it wasn't till he got to look at her the next morning that he realized that that wasn't Rachel. He's waking up. He just got done spending the wedding night with Rachel's sister. And it's like, wait a minute. There's a big problem here. I'm sorry. No offense. But you weren't the one that I've worked for 7 years to marry. He goes back to Uncle Laban. He says, what in the world is going on? And Uncle Laban says, well, in our family, the oldest daughter's supposed to get married first. And so this is just the way it is. He's like, you got to be kidding me. I worked for you for 7 years, and this is awful. He goes, I will let you have the one you wanted to marry if you agree to work for me for another 7 years. He ends up working another 7 years and ends up with two wives. Wife number one, which wasn't the one that he intended on marrying, immediately starts having kids. And the wife that he wanted to marry, Rachel, she's not having any kids. And this one's pregnant, having another baby. Oh, this one's pregnant, having another baby. Oh, this one's having another baby. Finally, Rachel's like, we got to do something. I have a servant girl. She can become like a junior wife. And I want you to lay with her, and the baby that she has will be kind of considered from me. So Jacob goes along with it. She gets pregnant. Leah sees what's going on and realizes that she's still up 4-0 in the baby department, but doesn't want to be undone. But she's not having any now. She takes her servant girl and does the same thing. Now this one's pumping out. And poor Jacob comes home, and now he's got four women that he has some sort of responsibility to, but there's only one that he wanted to marry. Dave Adams is like, I'm out of here. I'm flying to Philly. for 6 months. I warn you, don't come back. The women are waiting. They have a very competitive spirit about them. Well, finally, after lots and lots of other babies were born, Rachel did have a baby, and she ended up having two, and the first one was Joseph. And I can just imagine that Joseph probably looked a little bit like his mom, and he was so dear to his father's heart, because this is a baby from the woman that he wanted to marry in the first place. The other ones were all fine, but he had no intentions. He didn't court the other ones. It just happened. And he served them as best as he could, but the one that had his heart finally had a baby, Joseph. And so he didn't treat them all the same. Joseph was his favorite. His brothers knew it. And his brothers really got resentful when Joseph had a couple of dreams. Joseph was 17 years old, and he had two dreams. And his dreams were powerful. And for those of us who can read the whole book of Genesis, and we know the rest of the story of his life, the dreams were prophetic. The dreams were a way of God telling him about something that was going to happen in the future. And Joseph was just young. He was number 11 of 12 boys, and he did have an older sister too, so he's really number 12 of 13 kids. And he just decides, hey, I'm gonna tell this story. And the older brothers are listening to this story about how there'll come a time in the future where they are going to have to bow down to him. And you can just imagine that. They're like, we're not bowing down to you. That's not going to happen. And he tells them about the second dream that he had. And the interpretation is like, well, you're saying that even the brothers, even mom and dad are going to end up bowing down to you? And Joseph's like, yeah. Well, that made him the most unpopular member of the family among the kids. And there was one point where their frustration and anger boiled over, and some of the brothers wanted to kill him. And as a compromise, they ended up selling him into slavery into Egypt. So he's 17 years old, and he ends up being taken away from his family. And as far as he knows, he's never going to see them ever again. And he's now as a slave. He gets purchased by a man named Potiphar, an Egyptian official, and he works in his house. And he worked in Potiphar's house. It's hard to tell exactly. It appears that he worked for Potiphar for about 5 years. But the whole time he was there, the scriptures tell us that God was with him and God blessed everything he did. So Joseph went just from being the lowest of the low as a servant to being a servant that was in charge of everything his master had, because God was with him and blessed him. Unfortunate circumstance happened. I'm not going to get into it now. Joseph ended up being thrown into prison, innocent. But the scriptures say that even there, God was with him and God blessed him. And he went from just being one of the prisoners to now being a steward in charge of other prisoners. One day, two of Pharaoh's officials get thrown into prison. And Joseph talks to them. And one of them shares with him about a dream they had. And Joseph said, God knows all about dreams. He goes, why don't you share your dream with me? And I'll seek the Lord, and maybe the Lord will tell me what it is. And so he shared the dream with him, and Joseph told him what it meant. And that made the other servant of Pharaoh do the same thing. He says, well, hey, you gave him a good interpretation. That sounds great. Let me tell you about my dream. And Joseph heard his dream, but Joseph's interpretation wasn't good. Joseph's interpretation on the second one, the baker, was that in 3 days Pharaoh was going to come to see him to have his head cut off. By the way, 3 days later, things happened just exactly as Joseph said. And Joseph told the chief cupbearer, he says, when you go back to Pharaoh, remember me. And he's like, yeah, sure. And he didn't remember him. By the way, that happened when Joseph was 28 years old. So from when he was 17 to 28, he went from being a servant in Potiphar's household to a servant in prison. Finally, Pharaoh has a dream 2 years later, and the chief cupbearer remembered Joseph, and Joseph got to go and interpret Pharaoh's dream. By this time, Joseph is 30 years old. 30 years old. Pharaoh assigns him to work for him. And I know for those of you who know all this story, you're going, Pastor Doug, you're leaving 1,000 points out. I understand. My point isn't to tell the whole story of Joseph. I just want to kind of take you along. It was 9 years later that Joseph got to meet up with his brothers again. So from age 17, his brothers sold him into slavery, to when he gets to speak to his brothers the next time, he's 39 years old. That's a long time. I mean, if you think, I mean, I don't know if we have anybody who's 17 in our church. How old are you, Kaya? How old? You're 50 years old. You're 15? All right. So just imagine Kaya 2 years older and someone 39. Dave Adams. We've got a hole in that department, but I mean, Pam, you're probably the closest to it, huh? You're closer than Sharon. Now think about all the years between your age and your mom's age. I mean, let's see. Your mom went to college. Your mom started her life. She went all through those young adult years, years raising you, building her career and teaching. And here she is, you know, she's a well-established, well, highly regarded teacher, you know. All those years, Joseph was away in that prison. And you just have to, let's just be honest. I wonder what he thought. I wonder if he thought that God had forgotten him. I wonder if he could have rehearsed in his mind how he was going to get revenge against his brothers. Time in our imaginations can be a bad thing. Sometimes people can relive things that have happened to them in the past where they have been hurt. And they can review the details and they can remember how bad it hurt and almost continue the pain through their memory and recollection of what took place. Sometimes people get it in their mind that the thing they want more than anything else is revenge. And if you give them a long time, they've got a lot of time to rehearse what they would do as they vent all their rage. And then you got to wonder about what he thought about God. Why'd God let this happen to me? Maybe God doesn't care about me. Maybe God thinks that I'm worthless. The imagination, our imaginations can be our worst foe. Well, in the book of Genesis chapter 45, we find the story of when Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. They have not seen him in so long that I'm sure they have no idea what he looked like. 39 years old, that would be sort of like going to your 25th high school reunion or something like that. I know I had one guy, he was my next door neighbor, and we used to spend so much time together. And I found his phone number, and I tried to tell him. I said, John, you got to come to reunion with us. He goes, oh, I don't want to go. And I said, why not? He goes, I've changed. And I said, well, we've all changed. He goes, I haven't changed for the good. And I go, what do you mean? Now, last time I had seen John, he was as tall as me, 6'2", but he was skinny. He was 6'2" and probably weighed 150 pounds, and he always had long hair. Well, John was tipping the scales at about just under 400 pounds, and he's bald. And he told me, he goes, you know, he works as a plumber. And he told me, he goes, I go into homes of people that we went to high school with, and they have no idea who I am. None at all. And he goes, I did talk him into going to reunion, and no one did know who he was either. They're like, who are you? So you can just imagine, Joseph hadn't seen his brothers for all these years. They have changed. He has changed. They're not even going to recognize him. But in the back of their minds, they have a memory of something really bad that they did. And they had something that Joseph didn't have. They had years of listening to their father process his pain about what had happened. Their father thought that a wild animal had killed his son. And he cried himself to sleep. And he mourned for a long time. And any time anything came up that made him think of Joseph, he would mention it. And the brothers, every time, they would have to remember what they did. And then they would have to remember that they lied to their father. And you can just imagine, in their minds, I'm sure they thought many, many times, if I could go back and change one thing in life, I know the one thing I would have done. I wouldn't have done that to Joseph. But they had to live with it. So here we go. Genesis chapter 45, verse 1. So Joseph, then Joseph could no longer control himself before his attendants, and he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard all about it. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. And the reason they were terrified is because they have a Netflix account and they've watched plenty of movies to know what revenge is like. If this is really Joseph and he is really this powerful, we are so dead. And being dead is going to be the easy part. The process of getting to death is going to be the bad part. What is he going to do? Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. And when they had done so, he says, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here. Because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. So look at this. Joseph did not spend the last 20 plus years rehearsing revenge or reviewing his pain or planning on what he was going to do to let them hurt and to experience the pain that he experienced. He had turned his heart to the Lord and he was looking at the situation, seeing that God had a plan and God was working through even my brothers. He says, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there has been famine in the land. And you can imagine they thought it was pretty bad. But he said to them, there's another 5 years coming. There will not be plowing or reaping, but God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Wow. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God. Amen. Sometimes God moves in mysterious ways. And I tell you, when you are living in faith and you are walking with God and all of a sudden a door closes in life, don't start crying and feeling like you have lost. If you are walking with the Lord, He's got control of your life. And that means that He's just setting you up for something else, and we need to trust Him. All too often, I think we look too closely at the stats, the earthly stats on things, and we go, well, if God's in it, then it must mean that I'm going to get more, and things are going to go easier. And if I'm not getting more and things are getting more difficult, then it must not be of God. But God moves in a mysterious way, and sometimes the path of the faithful is a lonely path. And sometimes the path of the faithful is a path that puts you in a place where you have very little. I couldn't help remembering the story of David and Goliath. I don't know how tough Goliath really was, because I know you can't necessarily judge a book by its cover. And like, for instance, you take my son-in-law. I mean, there's some pretty big guys in the gym. They go and they start lifting weights and stuff, and you're like, wow, that's like a walking mountain. And I have literally watched my son-in-law walk in and move considerably more weight than them. See, I don't know. Goliath was really big, but I knew that there was no other soldier that was willing to stand in the ring with him. What was David thinking? Well, I know a couple of things that he wasn't thinking. David was not rehearsing in his mind all the ways that he could die. Yep, I was thinking about that. I think it would be very easy, as you are looking across the field at this humongous guy, with his armor and his spear and sword and everything else, and you hear his voice, which probably sounds like James Earl Jones, that you're just thinking, he could stab me with the spear and then like pick up my body and then stick the whole spear into a tree and I could just be hanging there dead. Or he could take his sword and he could cut my head off. Or he could cut off my right arm, and then my left arm, and then my right leg, and then my left leg, and I'd just be laying there as a big stump, and then he cuts my head off. Or, I mean, you can just go on and on. It's like all you can imagine is all the different ways you're going to die. Now, really, David should have been thinking about those things, because that's reality. And sometimes people will try to discourage you by using that expression, that's reality, and you just got to face reality. But rather than looking at that reality, David was basing his decision on his trust in God. So they offered him some armor. It didn't fit him very well. And he's like, I'm going to go for it. I don't want to put on someone's armor that doesn't fit me anyway. The Lord has been with me when I have been out on the field all alone, me and sheep, and a bear came up. And the Lord was with me then, and I know the Lord will be with me now. And with this same little sling that I took, that I was able to defend the sheep and I was able to keep myself alive, with this very sling, the Lord's going to take care of me and He's going to take care of us. And he let it go. I don't know where exactly it hit Goliath, but it was enough to take him down. And then David did the gory job of cutting off Goliath's head with Goliath's own sword. And if you want to continue reading in the Old Testament, you're going to find out that that sword hung around for a while because it was like, wow. It's like a trophy you want to keep, big, humongous sword. But the big, humongous sword is not what gave the victory. And so what do you want to do? You want to save the sling? Yeah, we could save the sling. Does the sling look impressive? No, it's just a regular sling. What about the stone? Is there something unique about the stone? No, there's nothing. Nobody cares about seeing that sling because it's ordinary. What was wonderful about it was not it. What was wonderful about it is what God did with it. And the Lord put that young man where he needed to be at just the right time. And I honestly believe that that whole business of little David and the sling slaying Goliath was part of the Lord preparing David for the years when he would be a king. He was not an unknown. He was one that people knew that from the time he was just young, he had courage in his heart, and God was with him. God moves in mysterious ways. One more Old Testament story, and then I'll wrap up, because I know our service has gone long. Jeremiah chapter 24. Jeremiah was a prophet, and at the time when the southern kingdom of Judah fell, and the people, most of the people had been hauled off to Babylon, and there was this big question, does God care about us? Has the Lord given up on us? Is he hearing our prayers? And Jeremiah, in chapter 24, communicates this to the people. It says, after Jehoiachin, son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and his officials, the craftsmen, artisans of Judah, were carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. The Lord showed me two baskets of figs placed in front of the temple of the Lord. One basket had very good figs, like those that ripen early, and another basket that had very poor figs, so that they could not be eaten. And the Lord asked me, what do you see, Jeremiah? Figs, I answered. The good ones are very good, but the poor ones are so bad they cannot be eaten. Then the word of the Lord came to me. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Like these good figs, I regard as good the exiles from Judah, whom I sent away from this place to the land of the Babylonians. My eyes will watch over them for their good, and I will bring them back to this land, and I will build them up, and I will not tear them down, and I will plant them and not uproot them, and I will give them a heart to know me, that I am the Lord, and they will be my people, and I will be their God, for they will return to me with all their heart. Jeremiah's message to the people, well, it was really God's message to the people, was, although outwardly it may look like you have lost everything and that your God has forgotten you, this is part of my plan. This is where you need to be, and you need to trust me in this time. Listen to these wonderful words he says to them. He says, my eyes will watch over them for their good. Yes, I know you're in Babylon. I've allowed you to go there. I am leading your steps, and I'm going to watch over them. I'm going to bring you back in my time, but I'm going to build you up while you're there. I'm not going to tear you down. And I'm going to do more than that. Verse 7 says, I will give them a heart to know me, that I am their Lord. Sometimes the Lord puts us in places that are difficult places because there's lessons that we need to learn there. I wish that we could learn all the great lessons of faith that we need to learn by experiencing mountaintop after mountaintop. But sometimes it's in the valleys when it seems like we have nothing, where we are just exactly where we need to be. And God teaches us, and God does things in us that maybe we wouldn't have heard if we were on top of the mountain. Maybe we wouldn't be ready for. God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence hides a smiling face. And maybe the thing that you're looking at you think is the toughest thing in the world you're having to face right now, maybe that is a situation that is going to bring you good. Maybe that is a situation that is going to move you into a better place in life. Maybe that is going to be a situation that's going to bring people into your life that are going to be a blessing like never before. Or maybe it's going to be a place where he's going to use you, but you just need to trust God. Amen.